Okay, so we're diving into the Supreme Court case you sent over United States v. Russell, a 1973 case. And this one's going to be really interesting, tackling this whole concept of entrapment. And we're looking at a situation where a government agent, an undercover agent, supplied a key ingredient for making meth.
Yeah, Russell, it's one of those cases that really gets you thinking about, where's the line when it comes to law enforcement investigations? And as a law student, you're probably running into this concept. And understanding Russell, it's really key to understanding entrapment, where the legal boundaries are, and it sets some pretty important precedents that are, still debated today. So we'll break down the facts and the reasoning and why this case, from decades ago still matters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's start, at the very beginning. What happened in this case? What were the core facts that brought this to the Supreme Court?
So the case centered around this undercover federal agent named Joe Shapiro, and he was investigating Richard Russell for making meth, illegally manufacturing methamphetamine. And this is where things get really interesting, and where the whole controversy comes in, because Shapiro, he didn't just observe Russell. He took it a step further. He offered to provide this chemical called phenyl-2-propanone, or P2P. And that's a chemical that's needed to make meth. And at the time, it wasn't something you could just easily get legally. So Shapiro, he supplies 100 grams of this P2P to Russell. And the deal was that Shapiro would get half of the meth that was produced.
Half the meth in exchange for this crucial ingredient. So we're talking at a pretty significant level of involvement from law enforcement here. So what about Russell before all this went down? Was he already involved in making meth?
Yeah, that's a really important point. According to the Supreme Court's findings, Russell and the people he was working with, they were already making meth before Agent Shapiro showed up. When Shapiro first visited their operation, he actually saw an empty bottle that was labeled phenyl-2-propanone. So it suggests that they had been using P2P before, and then there's the fact that they didn't stop making meth after Shapiro provided the P2P. They kept going. Shapiro got his share of the meth as agreed, and he even bought more of the finished product from them later on, and ultimately Russell was arrested and convicted.
So Russell was found guilty at trial, but the case didn't end there, right? It went through the appeals process. Can you walk us through how this case moved to the courts?
Exactly. So Russell's defense at trial was entrapment, but he was still convicted. He then appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Ninth Circuit, they actually reversed the trial court's decision. They felt that the government providing that essential ingredient, the PDP, was going too far. They actually said it was an intolerable degree of governmental participation in the criminal enterprise. Pretty strong words.
Intolerable. That really emphasizes how concerned the Ninth Circuit was. But the Supreme Court then steps in, right? What happened next?
Yep, the government appealed the Ninth Circuit's ruling, and the Supreme Court agreed to hear the case. So they granted certiorari. In the end, they disagreed with the Ninth Circuit and reversed their decision, which meant that Russell's original conviction was reinstated.
Okay, so now we get to the heart of the legal issue that the Supreme Court had to decide. What was the core question they were wrestling with regarding entrapment in this specific scenario?
The big question was, did Agent Shapiro supplying the P2P constitute entrapment under the law? And tied to that was this question of whether, even if it wasn't technically entrapment, the way the law defined it at the time, was the government's conduct so bad, so over the line, that it violated Russell's constitutional right to due process?
And so how did the Supreme Court ultimately answer these really important questions?
Yeah.
What was their ruling?
They ruled that no, based on the specific facts of this case, there wasn't entrapment in a legal sense, and the government's actions didn't violate due process, so they upheld Russell's conviction.
Okay, so let's unpack the Supreme Court's reasoning. What was the logic behind their decision? What framework did they use to reach this conclusion?
The key here is the subjective test for entrapment. That's the standard the majority of the court used. And basically, what the subjective test does is it focuses on the defendant's predisposition to commit the crime. So it's asking, was this person already inclined to break the law before the government got involved? It's less about what law enforcement specifically did and more about the defendant's own intentions. Were they already willing to commit the crime?
So applying that subjective test to Russell, what evidence did the court rely on to determine that Russell was, in fact, predisposed to making methamphetamine?
So there were a few key pieces of evidence. The empty P2P bottle that Shapiro found at Russell's lab during that first visit, that was a big one. It suggested that they had already been using P2P to make meth before. And then there's the fact that they continued producing meth after Shapiro gave them more P2P. So basically, the court's logic was that Russell wasn't some innocent person who got tricked or pressured into committing a crime he wouldn't have done otherwise.
And I understand that the court in Russell also specifically rejected a different way of looking at entrapment. What was that other approach?
That's right. they rejected the objective test for entrapment. Now, with the objective test, the focus shifts. It's less about the defendant's predisposition and more about the government's conduct. If the government's actions were seen as too coercive or outrageous or something that would likely induce a law-abiding person to commit a crime, then it could be entrapment, regardless of what the defendant's intentions were beforehand. But the majority in Russell, they didn't buy that. They argued that the entrapment defense isn't meant to protect people who are already willing to commit crimes, even if the government gives them the opportunity or the means to do it.
But even though they went with a subjective test, I remember that the court in Russell did acknowledge some kind of limit on how far the government could go in these situations. Can you explain that part of the ruling?
Yeah, you're right. So while they firmly established the subjective test, they also said there's this potential exception based on the Due Process Clause, and it's often called the outrageous government conduct defense. It's kind of like a safety net. Even if a defendant is predisposed, if the government goes too far, if their actions are shockingly bad and fundamentally unfair, then the conviction might be overturned based on due process. But the court in Russell made it really clear that this is a very high bar to clear. They said that Agent Shapiro supplying the P2P, in this case specifically, where the P2P was legal to obtain at the time, it didn't meet that standard of outrageousness. They didn't see it as fundamentally unfair.
Now, the Russell decision wasn't unanimous, right? There were dissenting opinions. What were the main points that the justices who disagreed with the majority brought up?
Right. Yeah. Right. And those dissents are important to consider, Justice Douglas. He argued pretty strongly that because the government provided the P2P a crucial ingredient for making meth, they essentially became an active participant in creating the crime. Mm. He felt that the courts shouldn't allow convictions for crimes that the government itself instigated. He saw it as the government basically manufacturing crime.
And what about Justice Stewart's dissent? What was his main concern?
Well, Justice Stewart, joined by Justices Brennan and Marshall, they took a slightly different but related stance. His dissent focused on what the government agents did. He argued that the key question in entrapment cases should be whether the government's conduct was unacceptable, you know, whether it went against what he called standards to which common feelings respond for the proper use of governmental power. He felt that if the government's actions were bad, then it should be entrapment, regardless of whether the defendant was predisposed to commit the crime or not. So he was really worried about the government basically enabling criminal activity. So zooming out a bit, what's the lasting impact of United States v. Russell? Why is it still so important for law students to understand this case?
In the bigger picture of criminal law, Russell is really important because it made the subjective test the main way to evaluate entrapment defenses in federal cases. It established that the focus in most cases will be on the defendant's prior intent and their willingness to commit the crime. And while the court did say that there's this outrageous government conduct defense under due process, they set a really high bar for it, which makes it really hard to win.
It seems like this ruling basically gave law enforcement more freedom to use certain undercover tactics, especially in drug cases, as long as they could show that they weren't targeting people who were truly innocent and who had no prior intention of committing a crime.
Exactly. Think about it. The court is essentially saying that it's okay for the government to provide someone with the means to commit a crime, even a necessary ingredient, if that person was already predisposed to doing it. And that raises some really complicated and important ethical and legal questions about where the line is between investigating crimes and potentially helping to create those crimes.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you wonder if the crime would have happened at all, or at least in the same way, if the government hadn't gotten involved. So it really forces us to think about the government's role in preventing and detecting crime.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. So as we've seen in this deep dive, United States v. Russell shows us just how complex entrapment law is. The emphasis on predisposition gives law enforcement some leeway. But that idea of outrageous conduct is still there, even though it's a difficult defense to use successfully.
And this brings up some important things for you to think about. What really stands out to you about this case? Does the subjective test focusing on the defendant feel like the right way to approach entrapment? Are there any specific situations where you think the government's involvement in an investigation crosses the line and becomes unacceptable, maybe as entrapment or as a due process violation? These are the kinds of questions that United States v. Russell makes us consider, and they're fundamental to understanding the limits of government power when it comes to enforcing the law. So it's a really important case for you as you continue your legal studies.
And to keep you thinking even further, how do the principles in Russell apply in other areas of law beyond just making drugs? How do you evaluate predisposition in crimes like fraud or terrorism? What are the practical challenges in figuring out someone's true predisposition before they even get the chance to commit a crime? These are all really important questions to keep in mind as you keep exploring the world of criminal law and all the intricacies of government investigations.
Yeah, it's a complex area for sure. And Russell really laid the groundwork for a lot of the legal battles that are still going on today.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for breaking all that down.
Yeah.
It's been a really insightful deep dive into United States v. Russell.
You got it. Glad we could dig into this one.
See you next time.
Take care.